This is Greater LA, KCRW show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiotakis. In Highland Park, near a train station, there's a quiet block dotted with tents and tarps. One of the unhoused people who set up camp here is a man named Richard Irving. He never imagined he would end up in this situation.
I mean, nobody wakes up and says they want to be homeless or unable to provide for themselves or whatever the case might be. You know, things just start happening.
He says he'd prefer to be in a shelter, and he's tried to find one in the past.
I haven't been able to get in one, so, yeah.
Irving's neighbor here, on the other hand, a man named Joshua, who didn't want to share his last name, says he has turned down shelter offers.
I kind of, like, refused most of them because I was out here with my partner, and I just didn't want to be split from her.
Now, Joshua and Irving might have to move soon. This block is one of 70 locations around L.A. where the city council voted this week to ban street camping. KCRW reporter Anna Scott is here to discuss whether this new approach to homelessness in the city is going to help people get off the streets or just shuffle them around at the height of this pandemic. Hey, Anna.
Hey, Steve.
70 locations. That's a big number. Where are they?
Most are in and around Northeast LA. So that would be City Councilmember Gil Cedillo's district, Highland Park, for example, where you just heard those two men. But also some of the locations are downtown in Kevin DeLeon's district, and some are in and around San Pedro, represented by Joe Buscaino. And yesterday's vote added to a growing list of locations around the city where officials want to ban street camping. The list started in August, and with yesterday's vote, it's up to just over 200 places now.
Remind us, Anna, why the city council is doing this now. I mean, aren't there already citywide rules about where people can or cannot sleep outdoors?
Yes, there are, but some of those rules have been basically unenforceable in recent years. There was a federal court ruling that says you can't ticket or arrest people for camping on public property unless you have shelter beds available for them. So instead of a blanket citywide set of rules that they can't enforce, city officials passed this new law in August that lets them go one location at a time. They have to provide 14-day notice to anyone who's camped at those locations before any enforcement. And during the 14 days, outreach workers are supposed to help unhoused people relocate.
Relocate. All right. Relocate where? I mean, you just said the city doesn't have enough shelter beds. So are they just moving people around?
In some cases, you know, this law really is more about managing the situation on the streets and regulating public space than about housing people. But that said, there is an outreach component to it. And while the city still doesn't have enough beds for everyone who's unhoused, by targeting select locations, they can focus their resources and try to get people into shelters.
But with Omicron, we have this pandemic. It's surging in LA and in many parts of the country. Is it more dangerous to be on the street or is it dangerous to be in a crowded shelter?
Well, according to the latest information from the county public health department, there are outbreaks right now at 207 facilities serving homeless people across LA. That does include some encampments, more than two dozen encampments, and some facilities where people live in individual spaces, but most of the outbreaks are at group shelters. Last week, there were at least 900 cases of COVID reported among people experiencing homelessness, which is the highest since the pandemic started.
Oh, so those group shelters are having outbreaks. I bet a lot of people don't want to go there, right? They don't want to sleep in a place that's that dangerous when I guess you could be outside, right?
Yeah, I mean, there are outbreaks at encampments, too, as I mentioned, and that's what a lot of the arguing was about yesterday at the city council meeting. What is the safest thing to do right now? Several people called in to ask the city council to stop exercising this ordinance during this COVID wave. One of them was Lisa Redmond. She said she's with an organization called Venice Catholic Worker.
These are our most vulnerable citizens. These people are also constituents and voters and our community members. And we can't pick and choose to care for community members that are housed and not for community members who are unhoused.
A couple of council members agreed with her. Mike Bonin, who represents a lot of the West Side and Venice, he and Nithya Raman were the only two members of the council who voted no yesterday on the camping bans. And he agrees with that stance that we just heard from Lisa Redmond. But meanwhile, Joe Buscaino, who represents San Pedro and that area, criticized Bonin's stance.
What I'm hearing from members and that there's more excuses of not wanting to help the homeless. Today is Omicron. Last month, there was not enough supportive housing. While 1,000 people died in our streets last year, and quite frankly, overwhelming majority did not die of COVID. They died from being on the streets.
Anna Scott, doesn't the CDC say that you should let homeless people shelter in place if you don't have individual rooms for them? I mean, isn't that what Project Room Key was all about?
Yeah, you're right. It was. And actually, this week, the mayor, Eric Garcetti, said that he's in favor of doing just that, letting people stay where they are unless there are individual beds available for them. But it's kind of moot because the city hasn't actually enforced these bans yet. They have picked out locations. In some cases, they have put the signs up, but they haven't issued any citations or arrested anyone for not moving. They aren't really following through yet.
So this is like laying the groundwork, right, for a crackdown on encampments, but they aren't doing the cracking down yet.
Yeah, and at least one city council member yesterday, Paul Koretz, described it exactly like that. He said that he's targeted a couple of locations in his district for enforcement, but he doesn't plan to move on them for at least a few weeks because of the COVID surge.
This simply is a set of motions that would enable enforcement as opposed to causing it. Passing these to allow this to happen at an appropriate time chosen is not a bad idea. It doesn't automatically mean that suddenly all these encampments and areas are immediately enforced.
Now, some advocates on the ground argue that posting signs in and of itself is a kind of enforcement, and that oftentimes when people see that, they will take it upon themselves to just move without necessarily getting the outreach that's supposed to happen. So the questions that you asked at the beginning of this conversation, those are the big questions. When they start fully exercising this law, is it going to help people get off the streets? Is it just going to move people around?
And that's the question, right? I mean, if you see a sign and you say, I have to go somewhere, are you going to go just to another encampment in another part of town? And these are all questions that I'm sure we're going to be asking, and hopefully we'll find the answers to. KCRW's housing and homelessness reporter, Anna Scott. Anna, thanks.
Thank you so much.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Back now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. The COVID numbers in LA County don't look good at all right now. Average daily cases are in the 30 to 40,000 range. The county's test positivity rate is north of 20%, and we're seeing some of the highest numbers of deaths in several months. Like previous surges, this one is straining medical staff and resources all across the Southland. And now, a nationwide shortage of blood, the worst in more than a decade, says the Red Cross, is also hitting hospitals in our neck of the woods. Earlier this week, the trauma center at Harbor UCLA had to actually shut down to new patients for a few hours because of low blood supplies. Dr. Mary Ann Gauchy-Hill is the medical director of LA County's Emergency Medical Services Agency, and she's with us right now. Doctor, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I don't think I've heard of a trauma center temporarily shutting down. You think of a trauma center as like a 24 operation, right? A 24-hour place. Have you ever seen that?
I think it's the first time in our history. I estimate it's over 30 years because I can't remember back that far, but 30 years we've confirmed we've never had a situation like this.
I want to talk about, I mean, because it seems like there's this confluence of things happening at the same time. You've got the surge of COVID. You've got, you know, hospital staff overwhelmed in many places, not just here in LA, but across the country. and now we have a blood shortage. How, I mean, what's going on? Explain the blood shortage. Why do we have such a low supply of blood?
What's happening is that people aren't donating in large amounts, and part of that is maybe fear they'll get COVID if they go out and give blood. So there's that. There's a little bit of fear there. There's also the fact that not as many donor sites can be stood up and staffed because the staff, we know the entire healthcare workforce is being impacted by members getting COVID. But I think the message here to the public is that there's no other source of blood besides healthy people giving it to save the life of another. That is the only source of blood. And so we really are trying to get the message out. As you know, the American Red Cross declared a nationwide crisis with the blood shortage. I've talked to multiple blood banks within the area and all of our trauma centers, and we really are at a crisis because harbor closing is like the canary in the coal mine, right? It's saying this could happen. And although everybody did everything they could to mitigate it, it still happened for a period of time and then it was solved. But if there are multiple accidents, a pileup on one of our freeways that results in need for large amounts of blood, we may have issues. And that's why we really want to get the message out to everyone, the public, that they could be part of that solution by giving blood.
I imagine closing a trauma center during a pandemic is not an ideal thing to do. I mean, obviously, right, it had to be done because of the circumstances. What do you think are the ripple effects when one does have to shut down and when one does run out of blood?
Well, the ripple effect is that patients within that particular community are going to need to be transported a further distance to another trauma center. Now, we're fortunate in LA County to have 15 trauma centers, but one could imagine in a, you know, multi-casualty event that there would be multiple victims going to multiple trauma centers, and that could create a problem in a regional way. And so we've reached out to some of the major blood banks with the idea that that they would prioritize blood for the trauma centers just to keep them open, and they're well aware and working with us to do that. But if we can, you know, if everybody out there listening to this can think about just, you know, you can Google American Red Cross or San Diego Blood Bank. And both of those are two big blood banks that are having donor sites all over the Southland. If you could just, you put in your zip code and, you know, you can sign up. It's all by appointment, so it's real safe and there's not too many people there. It's all by appointment and you can go give blood and potentially save a life, which in the end could be your own.
Is there any type blood that's, you know, especially needed at this point?
Yeah.
Or there are all the types are needed?
Well, really, everything is needed, but the one that always is a problem is O negative and O positive, because, as you know, O negative is the universal donor, right? So people don't react to that. And so if it's absolute emergent, right, somebody comes in, they have a gunshot wound, they're bleeding out, they're going to die, and we need to resuscitate them, we will give O negative blood with the idea that they're not going to get a blood transfusion reaction from that. I do know that A and B are also really, the supplies of A and B, A being one of the most common, is really low as well. So if you're type O, go donate. If you're type anything else, go donate as well, because it really can make a difference.
Dr. Marianne Gauchy-Hill, Medical Director of LA County's Emergency Medical Services Agency. Doctor, thanks for coming on and talking to us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
This is Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. If you're a football fan, it is Christmas in January. The NFL playoffs start Saturday. This upcoming Super Wild Card weekend sees six teams from both the AFC and NFC battle it for a place in the divisional round. The LA Rams play on Monday against the Cardinals. Whoever wins their division goes on to the conference championships, and then whoever wins that will head to the Super Bowl. Super Bowl number 56 at SoFi Stadium in Inglewood on February 13th, less than a month from now. DeMarco Farr is a former player and now a sideline reporter for the Rams, the only LA team still in the running, as I mentioned. Hey, DeMarco.
What's happening, folks? How you guys doing?
We're doing all right. Petros Papadakis co-hosts the Petros and Money Show on AM 570 LA Sports, KLAC. Yasu, Petros.
Yasu, and it's great to be on, and it's great to talk to DeMarco and you too, Re.
All right. Well, LA County, Petros, says the Super Bowl will go forward as planned at SoFi, despite concerns about Omicron, right? Another Greek infused into this conversation. So Petros, do you believe it? I mean, is there even a contingency plan?
Yeah, no, I believe it, because Warner Brothers, all of those places have a lobby, and they've been up and running since the beginning of the pandemic. And when it comes to the Super Bowl and the amount of money that's being made and the investment that the NFL has made in the city of Los Angeles through Stan Kroenke and the Rams and the Chargers as well, who are renting with the Rams and part of the football fabric now, is huge. And they're not going to let this stand in their way. I don't think that was ever really a question.
DeMarco, you've been spending a lot of time over at SoFi. Is Inglewood ready for the crowds of the Super Bowl, the congestion, everything that you know, the pomp and circumstance brings into the Super Bowl?
I hope so. We're going to see. You know, it's been tight getting out of, you know, SoFi for regular season games. I can't wait to see what it's going to be like for a postseason game this Monday against Arizona. But, I mean, they're doing everything they can. You don't know until you actually have one there. But no one's really ready for a Super Bowl, especially in an unfamiliar site. You don't know how to direct traffic yet. You don't know how many people. You don't know what it's going to look like. But I'll tell you what, inside the stadium, definitely ready. It may be the best venue in the country. But as far as outside, I think you're always going to struggle, no matter where you put the Super Bowl.
You're still putting 70,000-plus people in there, though.
Yeah.
And, you know, throngs of media and everybody else, the halftime show, all of it, right? So in an environment like we're in right now where COVID cases are surging, now we don't know what it's going to be like in a month. But right now, here we are, you know, is it safe, do you think? Are the safety measures enough?
Wow. I've been saying that. I don't know what it's going to look like in a month for about a year and a half now. So I've kind of given up. This is the way it is. You know what I mean?
You and me both, man.
Yeah,
you and
I'm
me
just going to live in this world as if it's going to be like this forever. So it is what it is. I was surprised and shocked and, you know, happy all at the same time when we actually got fans back in the stadium. A little nervous to be, you know, in a room with all those people, but you kind of get used to it and you kind of realize what you had before. So if you can do it for the regular season, you can definitely do it for the Super Bowl.
All right, let's talk about this matchup on Monday. Again, the Rams hosting the Cardinals, as I mentioned at the top. You'll be on the sidelines, DeMarco. How's that game looking? And Petros, I want your sage wisdom on this as well.
You know, coming off a loss to San Francisco, and that's just tough because that's a prideful thing. That's just one team that has your number. So they're a tough out. But I like the way the Rams are playing. I like what this loss could potentially do to this football team, which is galvanize it. Remember, they went through a three-game losing streak, and then they won four in a row coming off that. So hopefully the loss will galvanize. You've got some issues in the back end. Both of your safeties are dinged up. Fuller is out for the year with a foot. So you're, you know, kind of treading water there, trying to figure out your depth and personnel. But Kyler Murray, the last time you saw him on Monday night in Arizona, you cooled them off. They were the hottest team in the league, and the Rams took it to them. And the Cardinals went into a tailspin. So we'll see. We'll see what's left of both squads on Monday night. But I like this matchup a whole lot better than I like the Rams versus San Francisco.
Petros, you know, if the Rams beat the Cardinals, who are they going to play in the divisional round, do you think?
They have to go to Green Bay, if I'm...
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yes.
So they have to, and DeMarco's got to get his winter coat.
Yeah, the parka for Lambeau Field.
Petros, my God, yeah. Is it cold?
Yeah.
You know, that's the last place I would want to go.
I just want to say frozen tundra a few times. So the frozen tundra. Do you remember that from the NFL films?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
God. What's the game, DeMarco, you're looking most forward to this weekend? What's going to surprise us, do you think?
Surprise. Is San Francisco the underdog or the favorite?
Dallas is a 3-point favorite at AT&T Stadium.
I think they have a good chance of beating Dallas. I really do. Especially if they play the way they played against the Rams. If they get that run game going and they're playing that physical style of football. If they stop the run like they did versus the Rams and force Dak Prescott into a game where he has to throw it, three out of five downs, they're gonna get to him, and it's not gonna be pretty. So, San Francisco, Dallas, obviously, I'm looking forward to. Can't wait for that one. You know, and the Bengals and the Raiders. I do believe in Joe Burrow. I'm not so all in on the Raiders at this point. It's phenomenal what they've done to get into position. This situation with all the things they've gone through. So, give them all the credit in the world, but I really don't see them beating Buffalo.
That's a bold prediction for you. You think the 49ers are going to pull it off?
Well, I mean, what else can I say after what I just saw, you know, up close? You know what I mean? Wow.
Petros, what do you think? Which game is the one to watch this weekend besides the Rams-Cardinals on Monday?
Oh, I'm interested in the Raiders, you know, because, you know, there's still a lot of doing radio every day in L.A. You know, there's still a lot of people that care about, you know, the Raiders. I grew up in 1980s Los Angeles, and I'm from the South Bay, where the Raiders were stationed in El Segundo back then. Not that I'm a Raider fan, but I'm always just, you know, something about those colors on the field I like to watch. So, and I'm interested in seeing Joe Burrow and Cincinnati kind of take it to them and see if they can end kind of this Cinderella story that Bisaccia is kind of going through. So that's the one I'm most looking forward to.
Why are there so many Raiders fans in L.A., by the way? That's something that I've always – I mean, obviously the Raiders were here for a while when Al Davis – before Al Davis took them back to Oakland. Why? I mean, how did they get such a fan base in L.A.? Because it's still here to this day.
I mean, it's – They're Raider fans. They're not going anywhere, but they can be aged out. And eventually, like you said, you keep growing new stars from both teams, both L.A. squads. Like you said, Herbert here. You've got Odell Beckham Jr., Cooper Kupp. Cooper Kupp is all some kids know right now, who are just starting to become, you know, accustomed to the pro game in Los Angeles. So eventually, like Petro said, we grew up in the 80s, and eventually we're going to move on. And this team is no longer here. It's in Las Vegas. And there are two professional football teams here with homegrown stars. So eventually, that's going to go away. I don't think there's a question there.
All right, before we let y'all go, who's in the Super Bowl this year, do you think? DeMarco?
Wow, put me on the spot.
I am.
Well, you know what? If the Rams get their act together, if Matthew Stafford plays like the good Matthew Stafford, then – you know, the Rams could very well be there. Green Bay is obviously going to be there. I'd be surprised if someone knocked them off before the NFC Championship game. But you're going to have to go through them to get to the Super Bowl. On the other side, you know, I wonder if Kansas City can finally end Big Ben in Pittsburgh and finish him off. I'll go with Buffalo for the reach, I guess.
So you're saying Rams, Buffalo, Rams, Bills.
Rams... I'll say Bills, Green Bay, or Rams. I like the Bills. I like watching that guy play.
Wow. Petros?
You know, I'm going to go with the same. I'm going to take the same thing. I'm just going to order like at a restaurant, like a lazy guy. I'm just going to have what he had. I like the nature of the matchup. Green Bay, I'm not taking the Rams. I don't work for them. But I'll take Green Bay. Green Bay with a random California quarterback and Buffalo with a random California quarterback.
Petros Papadakis, who co-hosts the Petros and Money Show on AM 570 LA Sports. DeMarco Farr, sideline reporter for the Rams and former defensive tackle. Thanks to you both.
You got it, sir.
Thank you. Yasude.
Yasu. That's going to do it for us today on this Thursday, empty in Greece, actually. We're back next week with more new episodes, a roundtable on the idea of universal health care in California. It's on the progressive agenda, but it's not the first time it's come up in Sacramento. Can it pass there? And we'll take it to Tejon Ranch. What exactly does net zero mean environmentally? All those stories next week on GLA. Give a listen to any of our episodes, by the way, at kcrw.com/GLA. Tell us how you're doing. What are the stories you'd like to hear? You can also subscribe to the podcast too, kcrw.com/GLA. Catherine Barnes, Nihar Patel, Jason Grohman, Sonia Geis, John Meek, Phil Richards, Amy Ta, Mike Vogel, and Christian Bordahl all contributed to this evening's show. I'm Steve Chitakis. Thank you for your time and attention tonight. Have a great night.